Welcome to TRC Talks, a podcast by The Reynolds Company, an authorized distributor for Rockwell Automation. This show features conversations with the automation specialists from The Reynolds Company, explaining the evolving landscape of products, services, and solutions for industrial controls and automation.
Welcome back to the podcast. This is Brad Freeman, and today's episode is part two of our conversation between Wayne, Mike Masterson, and Joe Belaski on fiber optic cable selection. Again, this is a companion piece to the recent TechTark webinar that the three of them presented. So if you want to learn more, be sure to check out that recording on the Reynolds YouTube page. Looking ahead to our next online user group, on April 14th, we have a discussion on machine learning and AI in industrial applications. Thank you again for listening. Please enjoy this conversation between Wayne, Mike, and Joe.
Welcome back to TRC Talks, the podcast from The Reynolds Company. And joining me today are Mike Masterson and Joe Belaski again to talk fiber optics. Mike and Joe, thanks for returning.
I feel like we left you hanging from the other episode and we need some closure now.
We had quite a gap there. It's been a couple of weeks. And it's been a big cliffhanger waiting to kind of find out the rest of the fiber optics story. And in that last episode we did, you know, we talked a lot about just, I guess, the considerations for selecting the right fiber optic cable for your application. Today, we wanted to go a little more technical in the terminations and splicing and maybe the tools you would need to help you actually install the fiber. We'll start there. We'll just start about terminations. What is a termination, or what has to be done to terminate a fiber optic cable?
There's several things involved. One is that there's extensive cable prep, making sure you're stripping the cable back to the right layers. Then there's also part of the termination thing is cleaving the end of the fiber, so you're not breaking the glass or the core in the center. So where we're going with this is every type of termination method requires specific tooling for that application. Let's start with the original way of putting on connectors, where we were using an epoxy or like a Loctite adhesive and primer type setup, where basically your connector has nothing inside the ferrule. You are stripping the fiber back to a specific size using specific tools, inserting that fiber into the connector, then you're cleaving the end of the fiber off, using your adhesive, then you're polishing it. Sounds like a lot of steps, and there are. Traditionally, the first time I terminated a fiber, it took me about 10 minutes to do. The adhesive method, generally you can do a fiber connector in about 2 minutes. Still my favorite way of doing it, but it does require some pretty extensive tooling, and we'll come back and talk about that a little bit later. Those are still prevalent technologies being used. There were also some connectors that actually had adhesive built into it. The 3M product used to have something, they have something called the hot melt product, where they actually have adhesive in the connectors, and you put them in a specialized oven. Again, as you see, more specialized tooling. And we will follow up on and tell you why that's important, because there's no universal way of doing these type of connectors. After that, there are mechanical connectors, which you see lots of people starting to use. One of our vendor partners, Panduit, has a mechanical connector. Corning and their Unicam connectors have been out for a while. What makes those special is those connectors actually have glass in the ferrule that's pre-polished at the factory. So basically, you still have to use some specialized tooling on the fiber for your prep work, but ultimately what you're doing is just stripping it back, then cleaving the fiber to a precise angle, and then you're inserting it into the connector, then you're locking it down on the connector using a mechanical type crimp. Now, the issues with that is it's not like we're doing direct glass connection there. There's actually going to be a gap between the glass in the ferrule that's already been pre-polished and the line fiber that we're bringing into it. They will put an index matching gel inside those connectors to keep the reflection or the refraction down to a minimum. But there's certain things, those connectors work great in multimode situations because you have a lot more leeway there because you have a bigger core we're dealing with. In single mode, you can start having issues with it, those type of connectors. Again, single mode, your core is 8.3 microns. It requires a little bit more precision. But if you do not terminate fiber on a regular basis, these type of connectors actually make sense. But again, notice what I'll say, you come back to specialized tooling needed to put these connectors on.
I was going to say, this almost sounds a little too complicated. You know, is this something that a, shall we say, an average technician can do in the field?
The answer is yes. And I'll come back to it because I want to address one last termination method, and that is basically fusion splicing. This is something the telephone companies or the Bell operating companies have been doing for years, where you can actually purchase pre-polished connectors that will have a pigtail on it, which is, let's say, a meter of open-ended cable, and they will use a fusion splice machine to actually to mount the field cable to the pigtail. Wow, that sounds pretty high-tech, sounds really expensive, but actually the tooling for that has come way down, and if you do fiber on a regular basis, that's something to take a look at. Now, all these methods we talked about, the pigtail will generally get you the results when you look at dB loss, followed by the anaerobic and epoxy polish connector, then followed by the mechanical connector. But either one of these, you're not going to lose more than 0.2 dB at the connector point. They're all good technologies. It really, you have to decide based on the application and the environment you're doing in what fits best for that situation.
Before we talk about the tooling required to do these terminations and splices, let's go back to the preparing. You talked a little bit about, I think, how you prepare a fiber cable before terminating, but let's talk a little more, maybe talk a little more detail about the steps required to prepare.
I think we need to back up even a little step further than that, because I know we've jumped in pretty quick on this, but I mean, really what your goal is when you're doing any fiber termination is you're looking at a very small piece of glass that's concentric glass, and you're trying to line it up with another piece of glass. And that's really what we're doing when we're terminating fiber. So the important pieces here are typically going to be making sure that you have a nice clean end on that fiber where you're trying to get them to line up, lining them up appropriately so that they actually line up core to core. That's what Mike was talking about with some of this single mode stuff. The core gets very small, so it's easy to be offset a little bit. And making sure that you're clean. Those are typically the three main things there when you're looking at a connection. And then going past that is mechanically, how do I hold it in place? You know, we're dealing with little pieces of glass. How do I hold it where I want it to stay for my connection? So that's when we're starting to look at terminations. Those are really the four key points of the termination and how we do it. Everything else that we were getting into and Mike has already been talking about are really ways of doing that, ways of obtaining that. Using epoxy to help offset some of the maybe not a cleave on the fiber, or doing some, you know, putting in some additional material in there to help get the light through for the connection to make sure that you're getting over that little gap between the ends of the fiber or to deal with any offset. And then, you know, so that is really what all of these are for. And each one of them adds a little bit of loss that goes into that loss calculation. And so that's the reason when you get into doing a lot of things, we get into fusion splicing, because that's the basically the best connection that you can have. But by that point, you can't plug and unplug it because you've spliced them together and made it one piece.
Yeah, Joe nailed it right on the head. Those are things we need to take into consideration. The prep work on the fiber, again, depending on the type of fiber, whether it's the distribution fiber or tie buffer, is having the tooling to remove the jackets to get to the individual strands of fiber. So that's important. The kit should, whatever termination method you have, because each termination method we have discussed will require something called a cleaver, which basically takes the end of your fiber and cleaves it to or cuts it to a precise angle. So when we do match it or polish it out, we're going to get good results. So, and these cleavers can look anything from like a pair of fingernail clippers to some very elaborate multi-movement little boxes on it. So that's one of the most important parts of any fiber termination. And whether you're using an epoxy saw connector, a mechanical connector, or fusion splicing, that cleaving is a very important part of the termination step.
One of the things that Mike had talked about a little bit ago, some of the newer products where we can actually do some crimp connection type applications. And there's been a lot of advancement in the way that we're making some of the fiber with larger jackets and larger shielding around the outside that you can actually use regular electrical strippers to strip the sheathing off because there's enough protection on the fiber to protect it. And you can cleave it with pretty much almost anything because it's thick enough that where you hit it and any imperfection you cause in the glass is so far removed from the core that it doesn't interfere with the communication and any of the light transmission. So there's a lot of technology that's gone into making some more user-friendly fiber as compared to some of our more standard stuff. Now, when you get into the single-mode stuff, it's always typically a little bit more intensive because of that core being so small.
Right. Takeaway on the big thing on my fiber, I learned how to polish a connector out. So I grew up on fiber using the epoxy or anaerobic style adhesive type connectors. Takeaway on that is you do have to polish those by hand. After you insert the fiber in the connector and you have the adhesive set up, you generally have to scribe the end of the fiber that's coming out of the fiber, then you will polish it down. The big takeaway from that, if you don't polish fibers on a regular basis, your skills are going to erode. You want consistency when you polish connectors. If you only do them once a year, you might be better off using a mechanical style connector. Now, we haven't talked about one thing is pricing on all this stuff. Mechanical connectors are significantly less are more expensive than an adhesive type connector. There's a lot more to do, go with it. Where a mechanical connector might cost you $15 or more, the adhesive type connectors generally are about $3. So significantly less expensive, but you save on the labor side of it. So again, it comes back to depending on how much fiber optic business you're doing is really going to dictate the style of connections you're going to be, or the termination method you're going to use.
Got it. If you're just doing a couple, like you said, just doing a couple a year every now and then mechanical is the easier path to take, perhaps.
Oh, most definitely.
So I think you had mentioned you could expect about 2 dB of loss for every termination. Is that apply to splices too? Is there a limit to the number of splices you can put into a fiber optic cable?
Until you put as many splices until you kill your power budget. So when you start gaining negative power budget, you can, and generally the rule of thumb is any connector you want to lose less than 0.2 dB of power at the connector. A mated pair, which is like a connector, like going through a female-to-female adapter, you don't want to lose more than a half dB on that type of connection. Anything more than that might be excessive. I like to say any mated pair, if you're just doing for estimation purposes, do everything based on at least a 1 dB loss. That would include a splice. And typically splices are done the same way. There can be adhesive mechanical splices. And again, by splice, I mean it's just a bare fiber connection. Or you use a machine called a fusion splicer, which, again, is what the phone companies generally use. If you ever see one of those Bell trailers underneath a pole, those trailers generally have a guy in there with a fusion splicer that is just basically fusing individual strands of fiber.
And those are very large fiber cables with lots of strands in there, right?
Well, yeah, you're easily going up into that 144, 288 strand fiber for those type of cables is what we're seeing.
I know the term polishing fiber. Explain exactly what that really means. Like, what is actually happening when you polish it?
You're actually polishing using a polishing paper. After you have inserted your fiber, you still have a rough end of the cable, even though you have a cleave put on it. You will actually use either a two-step or a three-step polishing method. And every manufacturer is a little bit different. Every manufacturer will say you should use this grit of paper for the first polish. you know, use something more coarse, then get finer as you go down on it. So generally, that's where the technique is developed, because generally what you're doing is also you're polishing either on a glass pad or a rubber pad, and you're doing small figure eights on the polishing. And you're using a special polishing jig or a polishing puck. Again, we're talking more specialized tools, which I think we're going to get to in a little bit. If you're going to do fiber, you have to be prepared for
it. I always love the term cleave. You know, it's much more civilized than break. But really, that's what you're doing. Well, you're very good at a fairly controlled method. This is really, really what you're doing.
It's like you're a jeweler cutting the diamond there. Yes.
Well, that's exactly what you're doing, because you're not, when you cleave a fiber, you're not cutting it. You are putting it, you're scoring or indenting it. Then you're breaking it off so it breaks in a precise manner. That's why I find it very interesting to see some of the tooling and what the precision is built into some of these cleavers and stuff. It's amazing. You know, I'm kind of a tool geek sometimes, but what some of these tools and some of these kits have.
So you've teased us enough with the tools. So I guess we'll talk about tools. What actually would you need to do some of these terminations and splicing?
Well, the first thing is the most important thing is, if you decide you like a specific manufacturer's type of termination, buy their termination kit, buy their consumables. That way you can make sure it will work. Let's take a manufacturer CommScope. If you were to use one of their connectors, they recommend a two-step polishing process. Corning might require a three-step polishing process using different grits. They all have their own recipes, and for you, that's why you should always stick with the manufacturer of the connector's polishing method. Now, is some of this tooling universal? Can you buy generic polishing paper? Yes, you can. But before you do that, I would always say stick with the manufacturers before you get fancy and start varying off the script. Because also the manufacturers will let you know, they will generally sell you an insulation tool or an insulation kit that will come with all the hand tools needed, all the strippers for taking off the jacket, the cleavers for cutting the fiber, also the individual jacket strippers for removing the specific coating, like on a tight buffer cable, you want to remove the 900 micron jacket. Those are all included in those connectors or those kits. So where I'm going with it, if you're using an anaerobic panduit kit or connector, use their kit. Same thing for Corning, and keep it consistent. Mechanical connectors are the same way. You don't have to polish those connectors, but they require much the same tooling. So if you're using the Panduit mechanical connector, make sure you're using their kit and their consumables. One thing I haven't talked about is when you do fiber optic splicing, you might have an insulation kit, but one thing that will be in constant flux is your consumables kit. That's your different polishing papers, your isopropyl alcohol needed to clean the fiber, your chem wipes or lint-free wipes for cleaning. Again, there's specific steps. Make sure you have all the consumables necessary to terminate the fiber. It might be your Loctite adhesive. It might be your different epoxies. Again, if you stick with the specific manufacturer for those connectors, you can generally buy those consumables kits and have all the consumables you might need.
Now, in an instance where you run out of something and you have to pick up a consumable off the shelf from somewhere to finish a job or something, you're typically fine. But that's where we get into some of the other tools that you should have, which would be like OTDR and other check, like, you know, intensity checking and those type of things to kind of verify that the connections that you did make using your non-standard kit equipment is actually, you know, up to task. So that's one of the key things there is, if you don't have all of the additional testing equipment, you definitely want to make sure you're using the same manufacturer's consumables. But when you get into having all of the additional testing equipment to test the quality of your connections, which you should be doing pretty much anyways, you can verify that, okay, well, I'm using some other stuff that I had in my bag or other stuff that somebody else loaned me because I was out of something, and the connection is of the same quality or a good enough quality to meet the requirements of the application.
Yeah, I was going to ask about testing. What kind of testing equipment is out there?
Well, the three most important, and we'll go in order of cost. The least expensive one is something called a visible fault locator, or VFL. Basically, it's a high-end LED or laser flashlight, basically so we can shoot light from one end to the other. Also, depending on what type of fiber you're using, if you're using a Bearjack 900 micron cable, VFL will actually show you where you might have a micro bend or actually a fracture in the fiber too, because in those spots, it'll generally glow red. Those are the least expensive tools. These lights are generally can be purchased for $200 in that range, so fairly inexpensive. Then we'll go up to the power meter and light source. That's actually so we can get a true dB rating on the link. How much power are we able to show from point A to point B? It's a two pieces of equipment. Obviously, the power meter is a receiver, and then the light source is just that. It's your light source, and those typically are made. The light sources are made for either multimode or single mode applications. Again, the difference there, as we discussed in our first one, is the multimode is generally using an LED light source, and the single mode is using a laser. The power meter themselves can be rated for both multimode and single mode. But depending on what you have, that's a basic tool that should be in anybody fiber technician's bag. Then I guess ultimately we get to the optical time domain refractometer, or OTDR. These will actually take a snapshot of the lineup. We'll actually take a look at the physics of what's going on. We're taking a snapshot of how the light is traveling through the fiber. One thing it doesn't do, you can certainly test for, you get some power meter readings using it, but it's not as accurate as a power meter light source. But what it does really well, it will tell you actually where you have problems with the fiber, where you, let's say 300 feet down the line, it will tell you whether you have a micro bend or other issues with the fiber. This is when you're doing a final certification of the fiber. I think it's a very important step to use just to make sure that everything's been installed correctly.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at those three tools, you're really kind of looking at it, and they progress naturally as you're doing the installation. You know, the first one is basically a flashlight. Is there light getting through? Is it connected? Am I looking at the right fiber type thing? The second one, you know, just dumbing this down a little bit. The second one is how much light's coming through. So am I within my power budget? And that would tell you pretty quick I've got a bad splice somewhere if I'm outside of my power budget. It doesn't necessarily tell you how good anything is. It just tells you that, hey, I'm losing some light somewhere. And then you've got the OTDR, which actually will tell you basically where that is that you're losing light, and gives you that additional information and would effectively tell you that, yes, this cable is going to do what you need it to do.
Yeah, and because it is basically a cable radar, it'll also give you a distance or length measurement of the fiber too. Now, some of our manufacturers, like Fluke, do have cable analysis equipment, or their copper meters can be retrofitted or for fiber also, and can do a lot of this functionality too. So there are some kind of datacom multi testers that can do a little bit of all this stuff.
Yeah, no, Fluke and Softing, I guess, is another, like, an Encompass partner, Softing, the Net Expert.
Exactly. And both good companies, but both they both have copper testers that can be used for fiber optics also. And that's the thing about it, if you're doing this as on a contractor side, you'd actually store the results and print reports on this. So if you want to take a snapshot of an entire facility and see exactly how all your data lines are, you can store all this information into a nice spreadsheet type format. So it works well.
So where does someone actually learn how to do the cable splicing or terminations?
Our manufacturing partners a lot of times will have classes. Here in Texas, since we're talking about Texas A&M Engineering Extension Service, actually has lots of fiber optics courses, so you can go through there. There are classes sponsored by Bixie that also where you can get certified. It changes. I would say I've been through some of the Texas A&M classes before, and I'm being as old as I am. I've actually have gone through to the AT&T school in Atlanta when they used to have it and did my fiber training there.
Let's circle back to what type of machine is required to do fusion splicing.
Well, it's a fusion splice machine. When I first got into the industry, I mean, these things were exceptionally expensive, easily over $30,000. They are now a fraction of that price now. So you're finding a lot of contractors who have access to these type of machines. So these actually will melt the glass together, and they generally will have TV displays so you can actually see the cores line up, and it's almost makes it a one button setup to do it. They're very easy to use. Nowadays, there are two different types. There's single fusion splicing, and there's also something called array splicing. Because in our industrial world, we deal a lot in single increment fibers. We'll have a 12-strand loose tube fiber where the 12 strands are all loose. They're floating inside the jacket of the cable. But you can actually take those 12 strands and put them in a ribbon format where they're all lined up together. And we are now able to fusion splice 12 fibers at a time using something called an array splice, which a lot of these fusion splicers can adapt to. So if you're doing very high fiber counts, that certainly makes sense. But we're starting to see it a lot more on the field level too, because people are using in a campus environment, they're starting to use more ribbon fiber. Then they'll bring it into their fiber termination box. And then they will actually have, and by fiber termination box, I'm talking like the wall mount enclosures, or more typically, a lot of times we see 19-inch rack mount enclosures. You'll actually have cartridges that will have 12 fiber terminations and a pigtail for you to fusion splice 12 fibers at a time on. 20 years ago, this technology was available. It was extremely expensive. It's not so expensive these days. So we're seeing a lot of contractors actually have access to this. And these machines can be rented also. This is, if you don't want to make the capital investment, you can actually rent these machines. So that will also keep the cost down. I love fusion splicers. If given the choice, if I was doing this on a regular basis, that's the route I would go.
A lot of the times when you're doing the fusion splicing, there's times where you're not actually coming out of the front of the patch panel. You know, a lot of times when you're doing a fusion splice, you're continuing the fiber on through a patch panel into another place, but you're not actually coming out of the front going and patching to another piece. You're sometimes just fusion splicing two cables together and just continuing on. And, you know, so you'll see this sometimes in different facilities and things, depending on what we're doing, where, you know, if you're running a lot of fiber down between two buildings and you're going to a third building after that, you may drop some of those fiber off at the building in the middle, but some of those may just get a fusion splice and continue on and not go through the patch in the front, or maybe some will go through the patch in the front in case you want to have some spare there or want to use them later. And so you do see that sometimes. And it's kind of a way of limiting the power you lost there is you're not having to go through an additional patch cord in that termination. So it's not an extremely common thing, but we're seeing that a little bit more around some of when you have more jumps.
So maybe as we try to wrap up this episode, if we could summarize the common steps required for the termination of fiber or the splicing of fiber.
Step one, get the right tools.
Yeah, as Joe said, the correct tools and the right testing equipment to begin with. And again, what you need to know is identify the type of fiber you're working with, making sure you have the tools necessary to get into the fiber, open it up, and get to your fiber. Then make sure you have the necessary tools for stripping the jacket down, and ultimately the tools you need for cleaving or cutting the fiber when it comes to the connectorization process. All I can say is pick a method you like to use and stick with it for the most part, because that way you are generally going to have the right tools and consumables you need for that type of termination.
So in general, you know, like step two would be, you know, grab fiber and, you know, in general. So I'm not picking a specific method, but you'll typically strip the jacket off of it and then score it, cleave it, and put it in, use in some cases a different polish or some sort of a epoxy or something, and then, you know, put an end on it and maybe do a little polishing there. The order of that changes a little bit depending on the different types of connections you're making. And then you typically have some sort of a glue or something to hold the connector on. At that point, you're pretty much done, and plug it in and then test. Then, you know, last step is test.
And hope you did it right.
You did it right, but the nice thing about fiber is you can use generic scissors to cut the connectors off. So you don't need any special tooling for that, then start all over again.
Just some good old wire snippers and take two.
Officially, your Klein 2100 sevens.
Well, guys, once again, I appreciate this taking the time to join us. You know, between our last session where we spent a lot of time, you know, on the, you know, choosing, and now about the, you know, the more the aspect of actually terminating and making our connections on our plant floor, I think we've kind of, you know, did a good job of discussing a lot of the concerns of fiber optics on our using our, you know, fiber optics on our plant floor. So once again, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to your local distributor and we'll do our best to point it in the right direction.
Yeah, thanks, Wayne, for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to this episode of TRC Talks. For support, please see our website, ReynoldsOnline.com. And for those who are outside of our area, please visit RockwellAutomation.com and you can find your authorized local distributor there. Check on our show notes for links on how to contact our automation specialist team. TRC Talks is produced and hosted by Wayne Welk and Brad Freeman of the Reynolds Company. Editing and mixing for this episode were by Wade Welk, with additional mixing by Brad Freeman. Today's guests were Mike Masterson and Joe Belaski. Thank you again, and we will see you in the next episode.